Hey everybody, Tom Salami here. Welcome back to the Device Talks weekly podcast. In this week's episode, I'll speak with Kirsten Carroll. She's the CEO of CanDo Health. CanDo is one of these emerging and really encouraging companies that are really hoping to help people who have suffered strokes, helping them with the recovery, helping them to find their own independence, to help them recover their capabilities. And we'll talk with Kirsten about CanDo's mission and a little bit about what CanDo and Neurolutions will be talking about at Device Talks West. You'll hear a little bit of a different tone to that interview. I actually spoke with Kirsten just for a few minutes at this week's MedTech Vision Conference. Before that, Kayleen Brown, our managing editor, who joins me for the intro, will sort of preview her conversation with Nina Goodhart of Medtronic. Kayleen and Nina gave a talk or had a conversation at Device Talks Boston, where they talked about how to uplift women in the medtech industry. It was a fantastic conversation. We had a jam-packed medtech, women in medtech breakfast at Device Talks Boston. And Kayleen and Nina really, as I said in this podcast, blew the roof off the place. So you'll, I'm sure, enjoy that conversation. And you'll be able to enjoy another one that Kayleen will talk about that's taking place at Device Talks West, which is happening on October 16th and 17th at the Santa Clara Convention Center. You can register at west.devicetalks.com to be part of Device Talks West and the Women in MedTech luncheon that Kayleen will talk about. Use the code DTPOD25 to save 25% off the cost of registration. That's it, folks. I hope you'll enjoy. I know you'll enjoy this episode of the Device Talks weekly podcast. What I hope is you'll join us at Device Talks West for 2 days of powerful medical device conversations. Also, I hope you'll join us on Tuesday for our upcoming Device Talks Tuesdays with Biomerics. You can do all of this at devicetalks.com. So look forward to seeing you in Santa Clara, and let's get this podcast started. All right, you ready for this?
Ready.
Haven't seen you in forever. So good to talk to you again.
Oh, I miss your face.
Kayleen Brown and I had the opportunity to actually meet in person this week. We both attended the MedTech Vision Conference, and we also had some time to talk about Device Talks. So lots going on here, Kayleen, and we're going to be busy in the next coming month with Device Talks West coming up. And you have a couple of cool contributions to that agenda. Why don't you bring folks up to date?
Oh, I'd love to. So as you mentioned, Tom, we were attending the MedTech Vision Conference, which is put on by MedTech Women. So women in MedTech leadership and designing devices to better fit female anatomies has really been top of mind. So that being said, at Device Talks West, October 16th and 17th, we are doing a hyper-focused panel discussion around tailoring technology to these diverse anatomies based off of recent clinical information that's coming through and just the very obvious knowledge that men and women's bodies are quite different. And it's important that we are designing devices for the best outcomes. So we're bringing in Dr. Jennifer Jones McMeans from Abbott Vascular, Dr. Asha Parikh from Frontline Medical Technologies, and Dr. Tofi from Hexagon Health and the president of the Beverly Hills Hernia Center. So we're bringing these three incredible female leaders to talk through how to design medical devices with those diverse anatomies in mind, but through different perspectives. So we have the practicing clinician, so the surgeon, we have the engineer, and then we have the the OEM leader, the business leader who's talking through, you know, how do we put it on the market and how do we sell it and how do we make sure that it gets to those patients that's needed? And I'm really excited about that because I think once we can talk about designing devices in particular for conditions that affect everyone. So a big focus on structural heart, unsurprisingly. I think that we're going to be moving the conversation of what is women's health and how we can best serve patients forward in a way that we haven't before. So I'm really excited about that. And then I want to bring together my women and the allies. You know, we have so many great allies, and just like yourself. I mean, you attended and you know how important it is, Tom, to get female leaders Absolutely. Into leadership positions. I mean, that was one of the things that brought us together here a decade and a half plus ago. So that being said, we are doing our second networking session coming from our very successful Device Talks Boston Women in MedTech Breakfast. We're doing a Women in MedTech Luncheon. And at that luncheon, we'll be having a fireside chat that I'm really excited about with Cecilia Soriano. She's the president of Infusion Therapies and Technologies at Baxter International. And we'll be talking through life lessons of what it's like and the responsibilities around being a more tenured female leader, as well as new leadership coming into the medical device industry, and how we can work together along with our allies to continuing to close that gap of women in medtech leadership positions. And then also just being able to spend time with all of these incredible leaders and learn from them and, you know, increase our networking roster and making sure that we're getting those connections, because really our industry is so small, so familial. It's mm-hmm. important for all of us to get together. And you never know. You never know who that one person, that one introduction is that makes all the difference.
Well, I'm so glad you're doing this again, because as we've talked about on the podcast before, I think one of the highest highlights of Device Talks Boston was your Women in MedTech Breakfast that you had launched and completely blew the roof off the place with your talk and with your conversation with Nina Goodhart of Medtronic. And we actually, it's a good time to bring up what's coming up on the podcast, Kayleen.
Please do.
We have the audio from the conversation that you had with Nina. And what were some of your takeaways from that? I have to listen to it. Mm-hmm. I'm going to give it one more listen, but I remember sitting there just with my mouth agape at the conversation you two were having. And I know a lot of people left that talk feeling particularly empowered, and I think moved to contribute positively going forward. But what is it like listening to your interview a few months later, and were you as inspired by yourself as I think a lot of people in the room were?
Well, I wish I could come in and be humble and say that. No, I mean, it was really all about Nina, and it absolutely is all about Nina. She is just a rock star. But hearing myself speak about my journey and how I really found the passion and the need to be where I am today, and that, you know, story, the impetus of that journey, really actually re-inspired myself, which feels so weird to say, but it really is. It's a terrific story, and we're going to be playing it here shortly. I'm just getting goosebumps thinking about it right now. So I'll just let our audience hear it. And yes. Then you come to me, and really everything that Nina has to say about being a more tenured medtech leader in this space, I mean, take notes. This is a walk away conversation with actionable insights. And I can't wait for you to hear it.
Perfect. People going to hear all this themselves. Yes. So get ready for goosebumps, listeners.
It's pretty exciting. You can't get me started on this and these kind of conversations and expect nothing less than goosebumps, Tom.
That's wonderful. And then later on in the podcast, I actually had an interview with Kirsten Carroll. She is the founder and CEO of CanDo Health. And we are, as I said, at the MedTech Vision Conference. She was kind enough to take 15 minutes away from the networking reception to talk with me, not only about a bit about her career and about her move into MedTech, but also the reason why Imperative Care and she teamed up to form CanDo Health to really help people who have suffered from strokes. And we're going to have a great conversation at Device Talks West, which Kirsten Carroll will be part of, in which we'll talk about how CanDo is teaming up with Neurolutions, which is another company that has created a device that can help folks who have had strokes regain the use of their hands. So we'll talk about how MedTech is sort of looking after the stroke, not only the treatment and the removal and the placement of a coil to sort of treat that just moment of trauma, but also how you can help people regain their lives. You heard that theme a lot at MedTech Vision and throughout MedTech, but I'm really encouraged by I think how much more attention we're focusing on not only the maladies that need technical correction or treatment, but also the patients who are left over after they've suffered a heart attack or after they've suffered a stroke. So CanDo Health is definitely focusing on that, and I'm really looking forward to having that conversation at Device Talks West. So Kirsten Carroll will be our second interview on the podcast today. So folks will enjoy that. Kayleen, we kind of buried the lead a little bit, but MedTech Vision was terrific. Any highlight moments for you? What was I won't force you to choose one.
Good, because you know I was here the next hour just recanting everything, every moment, every goosebump, every second of it. I have to say that it was actually a general impression would have been my big takeaway here. We sometimes, especially since COVID and working remote, and so many people work remote now, it can be so helpful. And for me personally, it makes me far more productive. But there's just nothing like getting in person.
Agreed.
Especially being surrounded by your peers and people you are inspired by, and this community that you walk through those doors immediately opening your mind and ready to participate in moving health forward. So when you are surrounded by people who have that mentality in the very beginning at a networking event like this, positive change happens. And just even in my own conversations, I felt changed as a person, hearing personal stories, hearing how the attendees are changing MedTech in their own ways and what help they need. And then the number of people around me going, I can help with that. Let's set up a call here. Let's meet this. Overhearing conversations as I'm walking through the networking, wine reception, and just hearing, how can I help? How can I help? How can I help? And it was so invigorating, and this is the energy and the passion that I'm going to be drawing from until our next in-person Device Talks West again, October 16th and 17th at the Santa Clara Convention Center, where that same passion and energy is just in the air. That's what gets me through being in the vacuum, being in my office, head to the my screen. That it was so needed. It was just like a breath of fresh air.
Absolutely.
What about you?
For me, I agree with everything you said. So I'll pick just two moments. One, I want to congratulate Deb Kilpatrick of Evidation for winning the Farrell and Powell Award. She was our very first keynote post COVID at Device Talks West. So she's a remarkable person, and the video tribute they had for her, where they had many of her former mentees and peers and colleagues speak to her, was very moving. And her speech itself was just terrific. And she basically, I think, echoed everything we've been talking about, which is just find a way to lift someone else up. And I hope we do that through podcasts. I hope we do that through meetings. So Deb's fantastic. And just a completely different aside, Michelle Tarver, the acting commissioner of CDRH at the FDA.
Oh, wow.
She was super impressive. I've got some notes. I'm going to write something up for LinkedIn about what she talked about. But let's hope they remove the acting, because she would be a fantastic person to have leading this, being a permanent leader of this industry. I think it's fantastic.
Very needed. And I wanted to circle back to Deb, because you couldn't be more right. Huge congratulations, Deb. Deb spoke about excellence in our industry. And what is success and defining success? And from her perspective, it was striving for excellence, be it in medical device engineering, be it in a leadership role, however you do it, be it as a mentor with a mentee, and the responsibilities of excellence. And that really resonated with me, and I think everybody else in the audience, because it's not about right or wrong or what success means. It's about every day choosing to strive for excellence. And I think that is the makeup of the medical device industry.
Fantastic. Yep. Well put, well said, well stated, as always. All right. Well, looking forward to seeing you again in 1 month at Device Talks West in person, of course, because you're right, in person connections, they're just, it's the way to go. I was sort of lulled into, maybe we could do everything through podcasts and virtual meetings, but absolutely not. No way. You gotta bump into people. You gotta see people. You need a little more serendipity. We all need more serendipity in our lives, and hopefully we'll afford a lot of those opportunities at Device Talks West. So, Kayleen, thanks for your great interview and conversation with Nina, which we'll be playing next. Great to see you this week, and can't wait to see you at Device Talks West.
Oh. I am counting down the minutes. Thanks so much, Tom. And to our device talkers, thank you as always for all of your support. And I'll see you in 1 month.
This is Tom Salami of Device Talks. We're excited to bring you another great program for Device Talks West here at the Santa Clara Convention Center, talking new business models, new missions, new intentions. I can't wait until we fill this auditorium with MedTech's best engineers, entrepreneurs, and executives. This is Device Talks West.
The foundation of connected care is the who we are that drives the what we do. We shape our environment, and then our environment shapes us.
Thoughtful discussions of how it impacts not only markets, but society and the workforce.
What is it doing for the patient? And that's what our technology needs to be.
I look at what the standard of care is today. Are there areas where we can improve upon the standard of care, or are there areas where there are significant gaps? And that's what drives me.
What am I trying to accomplish? You know, getting back to that core, what problem am I trying to solve? Am I going to do something new and really move the needle for patient outcomes? So there's a ton of work to be done, and that's what keeps me excited.
Why did you choose MedTech? Find out at Device Talks West on October 16th and 17th. Register at west.devicetalks.com.
The folks that are saving lives, they're all here.
Good morning and welcome to the Women in MedTech Breakfast. Please finish up, wrap up those conversations. I'm a talker, I get it. So please, like, make sure you pass those business cards. If you haven't connected on LinkedIn, do it, now's your time. So my name is Kayleen Brown, I'm the managing editor here for Device Talks. And first and foremost, I wanna say with sincere and deepest appreciation, thank you for joining us. So Tom Salemi, the editorial director of Device Talks, and myself, we knew that having a safe place to bring together the senior leaders in MedTech, who just also happen to be female, as well as our allies, so thank you, gentlemen, to come together and have a conversation is really important and something that we were quite passionate about. What we didn't anticipate was that within 4 days, the room would sell out. So thank you so much. And for letting us know that not only is there an appetite, there's a hunger. And your participation is one step closer to closing this gap and making sure that we're able to move our industry forward in a quicker, more connected way. So before we kind of get into today's fireside chats, so we're going to spend about 20 minutes with Nina Goodhart of Medtronic, and I'm so excited to do that and kind of talk through what it's like to be in this industry. You're welcome to come up, Nina, and make your way. And please choose your favorite hot mic. So again, I'm Kayleen Brown, and I've been in the industry for 18 years. And a really quick story. So I started off in sales and in marketing in the medical device industry, and I'd always been really fascinated by technology, but I wanted to do something really meaningful. And what I didn't realize at the time is that technology can be meaningful, especially if it's in healthcare. But there's a responsibility. And I joined the industry, and as many of you know, once you're into the industry, you don't leave it, because you're surrounded by fellow passionate innovators, like-minded individuals who could have chosen an easier path, but they don't. They show up every single day on this really difficult path because they understand there's more out there, there's more we can do, and more importantly, there's more that we can do together. It took about 5 years in the industry before I saw myself, a woman, on stage. And I will never forget that moment. It was a venture panel, And I'm sitting there, and all of a sudden, this bright star, a woman, is sitting in the center of the stage, and she's surrounded by men, and she's speaking, and people are listening to her, and she's saying information that I need to know, and everybody's nodding. And it was this moment where I realized, I have a voice, and I could be that person. And it hit me like a slap in the face that you can't be what you can't see. So from that moment on, I realized that my own personal objective and my own personal passion was to bring and elevate women in the industry so that we don't just see me, but we see variations of me. We see variations of us. Because if we have diversity of perspective, if we have everybody having a seat at that table and everybody has a voice, there's nothing we cannot do. So thank you for being a voice, for being here, for sitting down and showing up. Because this is our industry. We can't move forward if we don't show up. So with that, So with that, I have invited my dear new friend, Nina Goodhart. Nina is the Senior VP and President of Structural Heart and Aortic at Medtronic to sit down with me for about 20 minutes to chat about life, love, the pursuit of happiness. Exactly. And you know what? It's unscripted. So we're just going to have a conversation. We have no idea where it's going to go, but I know that we're going to walk away and we're going to be inspired and we're going to find value. At the end of our session, we're still going to network, but I do have one favor before we get started, Nina. And this is a big ask. If you are sitting next to somebody you know, before the end of this breakfast, meet somebody new. Take a business card and actually email them. Go on LinkedIn and add that button, the add button of new friends, like it's going out of style, because that's how we connect. You meet one person 18 years ago, Holly Scott, I'm looking right at you, one person 18 years ago, and you're going to be inspired by them for the next two decades. So please meet somebody new. And lastly, but most importantly, I want a huge thank you to our sponsors. So you being present is incredibly important and necessary, but we couldn't have even pulled it together if it weren't for our sponsors. So first, I want to introduce Beth Harrison-Meyer of Aptix. Would you stand up and wave? And Jeanette Numbers from Nova. Thank you so much. And then our supporting partners, I'm just going to mention them. So MassMedic, MedTech Women, MedTech Color, MedTech Innovator, and the Mollings Group. So important to have these supporting partners to speak for. So if you want to know about any of these organizations, Amira Weiniger in the back can help you with MedTech Color. We have a QR code, kind of tells you about the membership and MedTech Women. We have Rachel with MassMedics. Rachel, can you raise your hand? There we go, all the way in the back. Hey, girl. So please learn about that. Holly Scott just mentioned over here at the Mullings Group. And I don't think we have anybody from MedTech Color here today. But again, Amira can help you out with that. So enough about me. Nina, let's get started.
I don't think I can help that. There's nothing I can say right now that's going to be better than that.
You're too kind, Nina.
Okay. And I have to tell you before we start, epitome of women in leadership, and you all can't see it, but right next, Kayleen, on the chair next to you, is a pair of high heel shoes because they were probably uncomfortable.
Thank you. You know, I woke up this morning and I said to wear heels, I need to be tall and powerful. And then I went, wait a minute, I'm in a room full of women. They don't care what I look like.
You're already powerful.
Yeah, thank you. And you know what? I do feel empowered, so thank you for that, Nina. Can everybody hear Nina okay? We might have to... might have to get closer.
I am not a loud speaker. I will do my best.
Okay. So if you can't hear, just shout out. I mean, get a safe place. So with that, I want to start, again, this is unscripted, but Nina, you had written on social media, which is very important, on LinkedIn, that you had a poll, and it was asking about mentors and sponsors. So before we go unscripted, I just wanted you to share, what is that difference? It's something that I hadn't heard before, and it keeps marinating in my head. So what is a sponsor, what is a mentor, and what could we do with that?
Yeah, you know, I think as we've all started to come up in the industry, we look for people who can help us, right? Because nobody gets anywhere they're going all by themselves. And we spend a lot of time, I think, thinking about mentors, people we go to when we need thought partnership, people that we go to when we need some help with something, people we go to when we're just not sure and we need somebody to give us some guidance. Those aren't always the people, though, who have the ability to sponsor you. Those aren't the people who are talking about you in a room when promotions are being considered, when new roles are coming open. Those are the people that you also have to cultivate, right? Who's going to advocate for you when you're not there? And chances are that people advocate for you and you have no idea they're advocating for you. And I know that I have moved forward in my career based on people advocating for me, and I had no idea that they were an advocate, right? But you need both. You need the people that you can say, I'm struggling with this problem. What would you do here, right? They may be in your business, they may be in your industry, or they may not be. A lot of my mentors, completely outside of MedTech. But then I have sponsors, right, who are talking about me in an executive committee room, in a room where they're talking about people going on to the next level. And they're the ones talking about what I've done, what my experience is, why I might be right for this role. They're the one calling a hiring manager unprovoked to say, here's somebody you might want to think about. And so we need both if we're going to move forward.
That is beautifully said. And again, it was something that I really marinated on, that there is a differentiation. How many times have we spoken up for somebody in our company or in our industry or even outside of that? That matters. So that kind of leads me to a discussion that we had started chatting about is responsibility. Mm-hmm. Again, 18 years ago, I felt like the leadership had a responsibility to help bring me up. And you and I have been talking about that has shifted. Everybody has a responsibility. So from your perspective, Nina, who has a responsibility and what is that responsibility to close you this gap?
Yeah, let me ask you, in this room, how many people have been in the med tech industry for, I'll call it 5 years or less?
Welcome, family.
Perfect. And how many, not trying to give away anyone's age, how many have been in 10 years or more? So each of these groups, each of you have a responsibility, right? If you're in that 10-year or more, and I'm clearly in that 10-year or more, we have a responsibility to pull women up, right? We have a responsibility to make sure that we're those sponsors. I tell this story that when I go into our executive committee boardroom, I generally carry, like many of us, right, this huge bag where I put all my junk in, and it's enormous, right? And I plop it on the seat next to me, and I just leave it there. And the men come in the room, and they look at it, and I just, you know, pull it closer to me, like, nope, you can't sit here. And I let the bag just hold the seat. And then I see a woman who inevitably comes into the room and sits in the back. Right? There's always the big table in the middle, and then there are their chairs along the wall. And I watch for a woman who's going to sit in the back. And I call her up, and I move the bag, and I say, sit here. We all have to do that, right? If we're in a position where we can do that, we have to do that. And then in the meeting, I'll say to her, so what do you think? Right? It gives her a voice. So that's the responsibility, I think, of women who are in the senior positions. If you're lower, if you're less tenured, you have to ask, right? You have to be visible. You have to go to somebody and say, I hear there's a meeting. Can I just come in and listen? You have to be able to say, can I network with you for 30 minutes? I just want to get some thought partnership. And then you have a responsibility to follow up. Because I can't tell you how many women will come to me. They'll say, can I get 30 minutes of your time? I always say yes. We have a phenomenal conversation. And then 2 years later, I'll get an email. I'm up for a role. Can you call the hiring manager? And I'm thinking, I don't remember your name, right? But there are also people, women, who will every quarter, right? They'll just ping me. We talked about this. I just wanted to let you know I did this. Or I'm struggling with this. You have 5 minutes where you can help me. When their names come up, right, then I become that advocate. Then I become that sponsor. And so I think we've got a responsibility on both ends of the spectrum to be able to raise women.
Absolutely, and I have to echo that. When I started my career, I was very passive in the industry, and I felt like I needed to be invited to the table. And then slowly but surely, I started asking to be invited to the table. And sometimes I wasn't. Sometimes I was told no. More times than not, I was told no. I would add to this that the responsibility also includes trying to find that resiliency. You will not be allowed in the room sometimes. You will not be allowed at the table sometimes. Don't let it stop you. Keep showing up. And in many cases, and this advice can take it or leave it. It can get you in a lot of trouble. But it's worked for me.
Now we want to hear it.
I tend to be a do first, apologize later. I have that kind of mentality, and I found that that's really what moved me forward because I take 3-4 steps forward and then 1 step back, but I'm still moving forward. And if you do so well-intentioned, if you do so as responsible as possible,
I think that could really, really work. And then it's also, like what you were saying, Nina, it's about saving that seat next to you. And I think sharing experiences is one of the most important ways that we can bring everybody up. This was my experience. This is how it went. Learn from it. Share your experience. What we went through 20 years ago is not, hopefully, what new members of the industry are going through, but they're going through different trials and things that we wouldn't understand. I mean, I didn't have social media when I first started into this industry, so I can't even imagine how that can hold you back, but then also push you forward. So the last kind of thought with the less tenured individuals is you have this power of social media and you have a different way of approaching networking and approaching the industry that maybe more tenured persons haven't had. Teach that to us. So it doesn't go just one way. I want to know, what else could I be doing? How else could I be networking? I guess one last thought here on the networking. I remember I had seen this venture panel and I decided I wanted to find my way on stage. And this was right when smartphones were starting to come out and you could be your own videographer. I was like, yes, okay, there's something I'm going to do here. And I always had this passion and interest in emerging medtech companies. So I went on LinkedIn. I was fairly new at the time, and I had to use my university email address to get on it. Yeah, it was way back then. And I went down the list, and I found people who had said in their bios that I work with emerging startup companies. And then I had found startup companies, and I made sure they were located within about 15 minutes. I was in Orange County at the time, so if it was 1 mile, it would take me an hour. So it had to be within 15 minutes. And I asked if I could have 30 minutes of their time, to your point. And I spent months just meeting people and talking. And that turned into my first series, Meet the Innovators, which turned into my next series where I was starting to meet the influencers of the industry. And it all started with, I don't know this person, and they may not respond, but that's okay because I messaged 30 people. And if just one person responded back, I moved forward. So message, message, message. Use the power of social networking. Use the power of in-person networking. And be fearless and be resilient.
And I think that's a big one, right? It's hard, right? I'm up here talking about it like it's easy. It's not easy. It's hard to go to somebody you don't know and ask them for time. Right? How many people classify themselves as an introvert? So it's hard for us, right? That's not where we normally, we feel uncomfortable pushing forward. A lot of people, a lot of women especially, will say, well, I don't want to brag, right? I don't want to just go in and talk about myself. Well, that's exactly what you have to do. Now, do it within the context of your business, of course, but if you're not doing that, how is anyone going to get to know you? And it took me a long time to figure that out, so I'm hoping you're all going to do it better than I did. But we've got to be able to push forward. We've got to move from being introverts to what somebody told me was that I'm now an extroverted introvert, right? Where I'm extroverted on the outside, and when I go home, it's like, oh my gosh, don't talk to me. My husband says, why are you so quiet when we have dinner? I'm like, I've been talking all day. Right? But we've got to be able to do that. And it takes courage. Especially when you're less tenured in your career and you don't have that confidence, it takes courage. And what I can say is push and push hard. And don't just push on women as your mentors and sponsors. And so thank you for the men in the room. Leadership is still primarily men. Most of them they want to help us. They just don't always know how, right? And so we have to help them. Go in and tell them what you need. Go in and tell them you're not feeling seen. Tell them you feel like you would like to be on higher visibility programs and products and projects, right? Stretch yourself and ask them to help to stretch you. They'll do it, right? They want the smartest people on the biggest projects. That's why you're all here. But sometimes we have to ask. Early in my career, I had just told the story because I think I had just internalized it for so long. I was working for a consumer advertising company agency, and there was a big project and a big meeting culminating from that project. And I wasn't asked to attend the meeting, and I had done a ton of work. And I was devastated, right? My male colleagues were invited to go, and I waited, the meeting ended, and I just thought, at some point, I have to ask why. And so I went into my boss, and I said, I'm just not sure why I wasn't invited. My thinking was, I must have done something wrong, right? And his comment was, oh, you didn't ask. Everyone else asked. Seriously? I always ask now. The answer's not always yes. But if I don't ask. If you don't ask, you can't blame anyone else for not including you. So I think about that a lot now.
I love that, Nina. So I'm going to do the other side of the asking coin. So my experience in medical devices has always been on the editorial, journalistic, media side of the business. So I've been able to see it from a very different perspective. And I'm going to pull in Tom Salini, our editorial director here, and an experience that he and I have had very regularly. So we put together these incredible events. We put together these panels. We have 9 podcasts, 3 more coming. What?
Shameless plug.
So shameless. And what we try to do is we try to have this diversity of perspective. We will reach out to 10 women to try to get one, and we're told no constantly. So which is a surprise. It's like, you know, we hear a lot, like, ask to be in that position. We're asking. We are actively asking, and we're being told no. And there's kind of 2 main pieces of feedback that we're getting. 1, the person we're asking doesn't feel like they can contribute. Well, you know, I don't know if I'm the right person. I don't know as much. This person would be the right person. You are the right person. We're asking you for a reason. We've been in the industry for decades. You're why we're reaching out to you. Have confidence. And if you don't have confidence, you have confidence in the confidence that we see in you. And say yes. Please say yes. If you can't make the podcast interview, if you can't make the in-person session, if you can't do that, say yes, it can't be me, but here are 3 names, and they will say yes. And then we'll go to those 3 names. We don't know who we don't know who we don't know. You can advocate for the other female leaders in your space, and you can say yes for them. Please, expand our roster of names. We need your help. And when we tap you, say yes.
Say yes. I have a long list for you.
Yes! Yes!
I know everyone in this room. But your point's so well taken. Say yes. I thought we were past this, but literally last week, I was talking to a woman at Medtronic, very talented, super high potential, incredibly smart. And she was telling me about a role that she was interested in, but she didn't have all the qualifications. And so she was going to pass. I said, do you have 40% of the qualifications? Do you have 50%? Because if you have 90%, then you're overqualified for that job because you're not going to learn anything, and you should be looking at the next role, right? And so she said, yes, but I just don't, you know, I don't want to put myself in a position where I look bad. I said, well, you've just done that, right? Because you're not trying. You're not pressing. You're not pushing. Absolutely. I don't know if you'll get the role, but your name will be out there. They'll see what you've already done. You'll be on people's radar screen, and maybe you'll get the next one. But absolutely, don't wait until you are fully qualified, because then you are overqualified, and you should absolutely be looking at the next role. And when you get asked to do something like this, Tom Salini called me and asked me to do a podcast. I'm like, yes, yes. I have a chance to brag about my business, about the amazing people who work with me. Yes, I am all in. But your point about if it can't be you, and it should be, in addition to you, right, advocate. Who else can you help to bring up? Awesome point.
I think with that, saying yes, advocate for those around you. Representation matters, and representation isn't just one single person. So think about that, move forward. But it's not about us, it's about the we. So I'm going to spend the next 10 minutes continuing our networking. So Nina Goodhart, thank you very
much
for joining
me.
And thank you again. Really appreciate it. Network!
Hello, Device Talkers. It's Kayleen Brown, Managing Editor of Device Talks, and I'm so pleased you had the opportunity to hear my incredible fireside chat with Nina Goodhart of Medtronic. And if that wasn't inspiring enough for you, we are so thrilled to bring you our Women in MedTech Luncheon happening at Device Talks West, October 17th. So from 12:15 to 1:15 p.m. on October 17, we are bringing together women in the medical device industry and our allies for a 1-hour networking session. I also have the greatest opportunity to sit down with Cecilia Soriano, the President of Infusion Therapies and Technologies at Baxter International. Much like my conversation with Nina Goodhart, Cecilia and I will be talking about how the industry can come together to better support women in medtech in more senior medtech roles, how our allies can support us, how more tenured women in medtech can support those who are newer to the industry, and how the more tenured of us can learn from those just entering the industry. So please, please, please join us on October 17th at Device Talks West for the Women in MedTech Luncheon. And a huge thank you to our generous, generous sponsors, Aptix, Capstan Medical, GlobalLogic, Integer Holdings, and Westfall Technic. We couldn't host our networking session if it weren't for your huge support. So thank you, thank you, thank you, and thank you for supporting female leadership in the medical device industry. For more information, and of course to register, please go to west.devicetalks.com. I'll see you October 17th, and I can't wait to bring you another inspiring conversation.
All right, well, now we'll play my interview with Kirsten Carroll. Again, she's the CEO of Can Do Health. And we spoke outside the reception area for the MedTech Vision Conference earlier this week. Let's listen.
This is an unusual setting for an interview for me. Normally, I only see like the shoulders and the head of the person. So this is exciting. And it's nice to have this conversation following the panel discussion. I just watched it, MedTech Vision, where you're really focusing on bringing care to the patient, which is something that a new Can Do is. I really love the approach, and I'm loading so much into my first question. I'm gonna just stop right now because the first thing I always like to do when I talk with someone is to understand how they found their way into the MedTech industry. You came in from the engineering side, right? You're a biomedical engineer.
A little bit of a funny story. I was a very serious swimmer. I tore, over the course of a decade, almost every piece of soft tissue in my shoulders and early end to the swimming career in college. And I thought I wanted to become an orthopedic surgeon and fix shoulders like mine. But then ultimately decided I'd rather move into technology and medical devices. And there was this brand new degree called biomedical engineering. And it was kind of thrown together. So I would be in the MECI classes with the MECI kids and the chemi classes with the chemi kids and the biology classes with biology kids. And so I always felt a step behind.
I was going to say, were you able to make friends?
It was just hard, you know, after being someone who was always really good and top of their class, yeah. It was really hard. And so, you know, I came out of it thinking I wasn't a very good engineer and thinking that I wasn't made to be an engineer. But loving device development. And I had a professor named Henry Bolanos. He had been a VP of R&D at US Surgical. He's recently passed away, but he had a class called Creativity and Product Design about the process of developing new devices. And he was such a mentor and friend to me. And I was just captivated by medical device and product management. And you know, in medical devices, product management is a marketing function. Mm-hmm. And so I could take all my engineering sort of background, but also my deep love of communication and liberal arts and storytelling and put it into a career where I got to sit in this world in between the clinicians and the user needs and the engineers who were solving those problems and bridge so many of those gaps. And so it total serendipitously fell into a little startup company right out of college. About 2 years in, had developed a deep passion for making stroke treatable and a deep realization I had no idea what I was doing.
What is it about stroke that it's I think unlike most other conditions where just the randomness and the cruelty of it, there's no buildup. You're healthy one moment, you're
right,
a victim the next, or someone who had a stroke the next. What was it that appealed is weird, but what drew you to stroke?
I think I've always been drawn to really big problems that need to be solved. And I'm fascinated by the brain. I'm fascinated by sort of the philosophy of identity and personality and soul and all those things. Right. And I do not have a history of stroke in my family, but I do have a history of dementia. And I watched my grandmother's struggle with Alzheimer's. Yeah. I watched her siblings struggle with dementia. And so stroke to me was just something, it was a big problem where it felt like we could have a huge impact. And it felt like not enough was being done about it. And so the more I learned, the more I just this was what I wanted to do with my career. It's also a very small, tight-knit community of people. Hmm. And for someone, I went to 9 different schools before I got to college.
Wow.
I grew up in Hong Kong and then moved to California and then went to college on the East Coast. And I developed a community mm-hmm. in neurointervention and stroke that meant a tremendous amount to me. And so this has been everything to me now for 25 years.
So talk about CANDU, because we talk about stroke treatment, we talk about coils, and we talk about removing and getting to patients within the first whatever minutes, and time is brain. And it seems like after treatment, we for most of us in med tech, the story's over. Like, oh, mm-hmm. problem solved, move on. I love that CANDU is picking up
yeah.
from that point on. And I've heard a lot of that sort of conversation today, and I think I'm hearing more of it. Maybe I'm just looking for it more in med tech. I hope I am. But tell me a bit about CANDU, how it came together, and I want to understand what exactly you're doing.
Yeah, I mean, so the neurointerventional space is a space that cares a lot about clinical evidence and mm-hmm. data. And so from an early time in my career, I've been tasked with partnering with clinicians and developing evidence that our products work. And the end point that we go to again and again in neurovascular conditions is called a modified Rankin score.
Okay.
And a modified Rankin score is a measure of your ability to live independently. So a Rankin 6 is deceased. A Rankin 0 has no symptoms and is fully capable. A Rankin 5, you cannot get out of bed even without help. A Rankin 4, you can only get out of bed with help. And a Rankin 3, you can get out of bed, but you are dependent on others for your activities of daily living. And so we tend to dichotomize a Rankin score, and you're either sort of, they bundle together dependent or dead. So Rankin 3 to 6, or you're a Rankin 0 to 2. So can you live independently? And so it was sort of ground into me from early on how important this was, mm-hmm. that 90 days or a year after the stroke or the ruptured aneurysm happened, has this person recovered the ability to live independently? Mm-hmm. So one of the big learnings for me, you know, as I was a very young product manager working with my own devices, was that when we do these catheter-based treatments, we're not actually fixing the damage. We're preventing further damage. So when you're having an ischemic stroke, you've got a clogged pipe. Mm-hmm. Your brain tissue is dying. Some people's brains die faster than others. But if you restore blood flow early enough, you can limit how much brain tissue is dead. Mm-hmm. But the tissues that's died is gone. In a hemorrhagic stroke, if you don't secure that aneurysm after it's ruptured, there is an incredibly high risk it's going to rupture again within the next week. And if the first rupture didn't take your life, the second one probably will. So when we're coiling aneurysms or putting in flow diverters or recanalizing in stroke, we are addressing the plumbing to prevent further damage, but we're not actually fixing the infarcted tissue. We're not fixing the hydrocephalus. Mm-hmm. We're not repairing the damage. And then as you look at these outcomes 90 days later, you know, the extraordinary thing is when you intervene early, you can double the percent of people who have achieved independent living. But the sad reality is you've doubled from 25% to 50%. Mm. 50% of these people, even with intervention, are no longer able to live their lives independently. And so the question is, what more can we do? Mm-hmm. Right? People may not get their ability to move their arm back, although with a technology like Ipsihand from Neurolutions or with what Microtransponder is doing, maybe they will get that back at some point. But mm-hmm. historically, they may not get their arm back. They may not get their language back. They may not get their energy back, but they can get their life back mm-hmm. if we spend time helping them adapt to that stroke and regain their identity and their agency and reintegrate into their communities. All of this to say, there was a huge leap in acute stroke intervention and preventing further damage, but there is so much more that's needed to actually care for this population.
So where does CANDU fit in? How do you help?
So I think, again, you know, stroke is one of the hardest things because you have all these intersecting pieces. You have chronic conditions that likely cause the stroke to happen in the first place. Mm-hmm. There may be a problem with the heart. There may be a problem with the carotid. There may be a genetic propensity for clotting, right? Mm-hmm. So you want to address those underlying risk factors to prevent another stroke. But you now have other issues. You also have sequelae of the stroke. And depending on what part of your brain was affected, this may be different. It may be your ability to pay attention. It may be your energy levels. It may be your communication. It may be your ability to control your bladder. But whatever tissue you lost, you have lost the ability to do that thing that your part of your brain was doing. Mm-hmm. So now you have to adapt to that. How do I live my life? How do I prepare my meals? How do I go to the grocery store? How do I pay my bills? How do I take care of my family when I no longer can do the things or use the part of the brain that I used to have? So you have underlying conditions. You have sequelae of the stroke. Many stroke survivors now can't work anymore. Mm-hmm. And we live in a country where until you're 65, your ability to have health insurance often depends on your ability to work.
Sure.
So they've lost their job. They've lost their health insurance. And they have what are called social determinants of health. They may have meal insecurity. They may have transportation insecurity. So now we have four things: underlying conditions, sequelae of stroke, health insurance, ability to work. And on top of that, you have mental health issues. Mm-hmm. Your entire identity has now been shaken. Who am I? My emotions are different. My senses are different. And so you have all these highly specialized pieces of medicine that are each looking at one piece of this elephant, and you have completely overwhelmed patients who don't know how to find those clinicians, don't know how to navigate their benefits, don't know how to connect with their identity. And so what we did is we built a multidisciplinary telehealth-based service that brings all these things together in a very holistic model, mm-hmm. Where we have our principal illness navigators, who are social workers and occupational therapists trained in stroke recovery, but they're supported by physiatry and vascular neurology and nutritionists and health coaches and psychologists. And they're all working together for a singular holistic care plan that also integrates with that patient's existing ecosystem of local in-person care. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot. It's something that didn't exist in a brick and mortar environment. And so we're delivering it through telehealth. We get most of our referrals from hospitals who refer to us as their discharging patients, mm-hmm. but we can take referrals from anywhere. We can take referrals from direct to consumer. We can take referrals from payers. We can take referrals from community support groups, all of that.
So do you work, or how closely do you work with technology companies? Like, we'll have you in a Neurolutions, the CEO of Neurolutions, on a panel at Device Talks West. Are you connecting patients with technologies, with devices that may be able to help them? And how does that work?
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that you learn very quickly when you work with stroke survivors is there is no trusted source of information. There's no expert source telling them the latest and greatest and newest things. Primary care doesn't necessarily know all the ins and outs of stroke. Mm-hmm. Vascular neurology is hard to find. Most people don't know physiatry even exists. So there needs to be a clinical ecosystem that can not just refer patients to these technologies in a really well-informed, competent, licensed, evidence-based manner, but then support patients in the use of these technologies. Mm-hmm. And so there is incredible innovation happening in stroke rehab, but the patients need a clinical ecosystem within which to be referred to and supported in the use of those products. And so, yeah.
And how does the payer community support that? Our industry is about markets and about finding places where there's efficiencies to be created and money to be made as a result of those efficiencies being created or new devices being built. How do the economics of that part of stroke recovery work out?
I can tell you how they should work. and I think we'll get there.
Yeah.
A lot of conversations that I have with payers, they've not been looking at stroke as a population health issue.
Okay.
Right? So they look at stroke as an acute event and an acute hospitalization. And then the chronic condition is the diabetes or the hypertension or the chronic kidney disease, right? The reality is stroke is the single most expensive diagnostic history a Medicare patient can have. And you can look that up Google Medicare chronic conditions data, and you'll find this health equity visualization where you can look by principal diagnosis at the average healthcare charges per year per capita based on the conditions people have. And so in the first year after stroke, it's a $25 billion a year problem for payers. If you look at the entire chronic community of stroke survivors, just in healthcare utilization, not including drugs, it's a $100 billion a year problem.
Wow.
So these are massive numbers, but you first have to educate people that this is a population health issue to begin with, and then educate them that there's something better that can be done than what we're doing today. The very straightforward front door way for us to bring this to payers is by delivering the service, being in network and billing CPT codes. And we got very, very lucky in that the Biden administration sponsored this cancer moonshot.
Mm-hmm.
Normally, to get new CPT codes, you have to go through the AMA, you have to design a code, you have to fight to get it covered. This is a situation in which CMS created a code themselves and said, out the gate, we're paying for this.
Wow.
So we can bill principal illness navigation as an enrolled Medicare provider today. Now, there's a little bit of work with the MACs to make sure we understand how do we code it and what's the point of service. And yes, you can do it over telehealth. We're getting through all of that. And then we are getting in network with every health plan that will take us so that we can deliver this care. And that's step one. I think we're bringing far more value to the health plans than what the CPT codes pay. And that is relationships we'll work into over time as we bill codes. And they can look at the population that we're serving and see the benefit that we're having in healthcare utilization and complications and readmissions, and then work into new models of value-based payment where they're actually further subsidizing this and encouraging their members to actually use these services.
Fascinating. Final question, just talking about the population itself. You've used the term on stage care partners, which I really liked, not caregivers, care partners,
mm-hmm.
really empowering the person who had the stroke to be part of the process. You also have a unique relationship with the patients you work with who help you, you're able to compensate them. How are you approaching that patient population? Talk a bit, if you would, about how you're able to compensate them and just how is changing that dialogue sort of change the way you interact with patients and make them part of the solution?
Yeah. And I bring this up anytime I have someone from the federal government in front of me, because there's still policy work to be done here. We talk a lot about wanting to include communities in healthcare, include communities in research. That's asking a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
These communities have had traumatizing experiences. They're still working through their own sort of shattered mental health and identity. And you're asking them to open up, to make themselves research subjects, or to share all of that trauma and experience with you so you can develop devices or services or interventions.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, from an ethical standpoint, it's incredibly important to compensate these communities. That led to something I had not anticipated when we went out and tried to pay stroke survivors for working with us, which is that many of them are entirely dependent on SSDI.
Mm-hmm.
And SSDI is Social Security Disability Income. And you have a limitation on your income in order to qualify for SSDI. So not only does SSDI send them monthly payments, SSDI is also their source of health insurance. So they qualify for Medicare early based on their disability. So, you know, could we give them full-time enduring jobs that would allow them to care for themselves and their families? Absolutely not,
mm-hmm.
right? Should we pay them for their consultative work with us and making this product better and making experience for future stroke survivors better? Yes. But when we said we wanted to pay them, they said, please don't.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you pay me, I'm at risk of being disqualified Wow. for my SSDI. And so this created a real ethical dilemma for me, where the last thing that I want to do is exploit a patient population in asking them to help build our company. One of the interesting dynamics. Now, this is true for SSDI. It's not true for SSI.
Mm-hmm.
For SSI, you have to burn down all your assets.
Okay.
For SSDI, passive income does not count against your qualification for disability insurance. And so if we gave them stock options in our company, and if they executed those options right away and paid what they were worth at the time, they had no income. They've actually just made an investment. Mm-hmm. And so in the future, if the company is successful, that will be passive income for that stroke survivor or their surviving family members, and in a way, at least in the long game, compensating for them for everything that they did for the company. It gets harder to do as the company gets more mature,
yeah,
because executing stock options can get expensive.
Yeah.
They're not a penny a share. They're a dollar, they're $2, they're $3 a share. These are people on fixed income. But you have this opportunity when you first start to do this. Ideally, I would appreciate if there were loopholes,
yeah,
that allowed patients and allowed disabled people the dignity of being able to consult and be paid for their work without compromising their entire ability to live their lives.
Amazing. No, great story and great company. And we're excited to have you at Device Talks West. And folks should come there and meet you because it's just fantastic opportunity to talk to you. So,
well, Kristen, thank you so much, Tom. I need co-conspirators in everything that we do. So I appreciate it. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Kristen.
All right. Well, that is a wrap. Thanks again for joining us on this episode of the Device Talks Weekly Podcast. Join us at Device Talks West. It's happening on October 16th and 17th at the Santa Clara Convention Center. Again, use the code DTPOD25 to save 25%. Join us on Tuesday for Device Talks Tuesday with Biomerics. It's going to be a great episode talking about Costa Rica. And of course, don't forget to like, follow, and or subscribe, as Chris Neumarker used to say. I got to get him to say that again, to the Device Talks Podcast Network, so you don't miss a future episode of that network. We're covering lots of great stories in the medtech industry, so don't miss any of those great episodes that are coming out, hosted by myself and by Kayleen Brown. And again, join us on Tuesday. Join us at Device Talks West, and have a great rest of your day. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Device Talks Weekly Podcast.